Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is July 18th, 2009, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 153, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, guitar tech. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. It might be /ACM, but we don't know yet. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM. That's for Apple Context Machine at macobserver.com. Seems like this is a week of change.
It feels like a big week of change, and I'm betting a couple people have already noticed that I didn't say Apple Weekly Report.
They probably did, and they probably noticed that they're hearing music still.
Yeah, it's because we now have our studio band.
Right, we have the studio band. We have a new theme song, which is provided by the Atomic Love Bombs, even a great band out of San Francisco, California.
You know, I have heard the Atomic Love Bombs perform live, and I've heard a few songs off their new album. And they have a new album out, and they're really, really good. I really like them.
And of course, the punchline is that the Atomic Love Bombs are my band, and we have just released our first CD called Let It Burn. This is my extracurricular project from the Mac Observer. And it's on iTunes now, and it's on Amazon, and you can get the physical CD if you go to atomiclovebombs.com. As a matter of fact, if you order the physical CD from us and you shoot me an email, I will give you a download link so you can go ahead and download it immediately. And if you want an autographed copy, we'll autograph it for you.
That is so cool. And when I said I've heard the songs, I actually have. And they sound great. Not like a punk-esque garage band that's hoping to make it big, but like a real good band.
Well, you know, my standard joke is that when your friends come up and tell you that they've got a band, your initial gut reaction is to go, oh.
Really, because my reaction usually is I'm busy that night, even though they haven't asked me to come see them perform.
Exactly, because you know they're going to ask you to perform or to come see them perform. And I just, you know, speaking with zero trace of modesty, we don't suck. We're actually pretty good.
You are good. And I was more than happy back during Macworld Expo to do the crosstown drive to see you guys play.
Thank you. Thank you kindly. And it's really cool that we're able to use one of our songs called Push Me Under for our theme song here at the Apple Context Machine, which is our rebranded show. And so, you know, personally, you know, if our listeners want to check us out, I'll be more than happy. And like I say, if you buy the CD from us, you can get the physical CD sent to you. And if you shoot me a note with your receipt, I'll send you a download link so you can download it. And if you want an autograph, we'll autograph it. Hurrah.
Hurrah. And speaking of changes, since we're still kind of on that subject, what do you think of the new design for the TMO website?
Oh, I'm really, really happy about it. It's been a long time coming. The whole team has worked really, really hard. Stephen in particular, Stephen Swift, has worked his butt off.
He has. And when we say worked his butt off, I'm assuming he doesn't have anything left to sit on because he has worked that hard.
I'm not sure how he actually gets any work done because, you know, he has to stand.
I know. Well, maybe he put his desk on blocks.
He might have. He probably had to. So the change is, I mean, I think the page, I don't think it's ever looked anywhere near this good. It just looks great. It's a two-column format now. There's plenty of room for the content. The teasers can either show all the time like they used to, or you can actually get the teasers with a click, or you can get them with every time you hover over a story, you'll see the teaser, and it's all done from a single pull-down menu, and it's handy. And we've got our top stories rotate through in nice big colorful blocks at the top.
It's nice. I like it.
I like it too. I think it's much more usable. Much more usable.
It is, and it makes it a lot easier to see more content.
It does. Substantially. And it, more importantly, though, it allows people to use the site like they want to. And I think that's always important for any site. You know, we can't really control what it is that you want. And I think that we've given folks more and better tools to consume the content that we work so hard to provide the way they want it.
It's all about options.
It is. And we had some more change. Oh, of course, the name changed for us.
Right.
The Apple Context Machine.
Which I think we might have mentioned.
We did mention, but we didn't really talk about it. You know, the whole point, you know, the show, when the show was first created by Ricky Spiro. Hooray, Ricky, yay.
Ricky's great.
Oh, I didn't see him too.
They do.
Yeah. It was the weekly roundup. And he was just sort of rounding up the week's news, and then, you know, eventually we started adding in the Context Machine, which was a name that he created, where we started talking about the news. And really, you know, Jeff and I have been doing the show by ourselves now for, what, 2 years?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
And the nature of the show has changed a little bit, and really the I think that the value that we're bringing to people, the thing that people seem to actually, you know, care about is the analysis that we offer, and the Apple Weekly Report, which was the old name, really didn't reflect what the show is about. So now we're calling it the Apple Context Machine. It's going to be, from a content perspective, it's going to be extremely similar to what it was, but it's a branding that actually positions the show more appropriately.
It does. And, you know, the very first Context Machine, when Ricky was trying out the idea, he asked me if I would be his guest on the Context mm-hmm. Machine, mm-hmm. which was a lot of fun. And it was also the very first time I had ever been on a podcast.
Huh.
And it sounds like I'm on a satellite phone in a war zone in Bosnia or something, because I took my old Jabra Bluetooth headset and paired it with my laptop because I didn't have a microphone. I didn't have anything to work with. It's the good old days.
Yeah. Well, you know, we took our own trial and error to figure out how to do the production when Ricky moved on to some different projects. But I think that we do. I like what we do. I like the show. I like working with you, Jeff. You're fun to work with, man.
And you're fun to work with, too.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah, you know. And our audience is great because they help us out with all of these changes and experiments we try. And, you know, and when we were going through the changes, figuring out the best way to manage the recording and everything, after it was me and you, our audience was there to help out. And before that, when Ricky and I were trying to find just the right microphone for me, mm-hmm. our audience was there to give their feedback on that too. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually still using the same microphone that our listeners said was the best.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. So it's been a fun process getting to where we are today. And now I think we're still using the same Apple Weekly Report logo, but that'll change shortly. We just didn't have the opportunity to get everything done. And, you know, really, it's been so long since we did an episode because I've been dealing with trying to find a new place to live. And we were getting the CD out. My band was getting the CD out, and that took some of my extracurricular time. And we had our CD release party this last weekend, and Jeff had some things going on in his life. So we apologize for the delay, but the Apple Context Machine is here now, and we're good to go.
Yeah, and you know what? We missed you guys while we were gone.
We did.
Yeah.
We did. So in the meanwhile, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y.
And I'm at twitter.com/JGamet. That's JGAMET. No why.
And where is the Mac Observer?
The Mac Observer, that's at macobserver.com.
No, on Twitter, dude.
Oh, on Twitter. That's at Mac Observer, twitter.com/macobserver.
So it is. I knew that. I did apparently a bad job of setting you up, but yeah.
No, I'm just a little slower than you today. That's all it is.
All right. Well, let's have one of these fancy guitar riffs that Ben plays on Push Me Under take us to this show.
The App Store sold over 1.5 billion applications, and it did so in only its first year of operation. Apple's Lawsuit Express has a new player on board, and China is getting closer to an iPhone deal if Apple agrees to drop Wi-Fi. Apple has a target date for its North Carolina data center. Microsoft is ready to try and copy Apple's retail model. T-Mobile might get some iPhone action in the UK, and Mac tablet rumors are back again.
Apple's App Store for the iPhone and iPod Touch hit the 1.5 billion download mark this week, which also happens to be the one-year anniversary of the online store's launch. The store served up its first billion downloads through April of just this year and managed to ramp up the pace and dole out another half billion in just the past 3 months. Thanks to the increased number of downloads in that time frame, Apple is averaging about 4.1 million downloads a day since the online store opened, in comparison to the daily average of 3.4 million in April. April Levine? Apple isn't saying, however, how many of these downloads are first-time downloads, duplicate downloads by the same user, or app updates. Regardless of whether or not there are any duplicate downloads in the tally, Apple seems to be able to serve up iPhone and iPod Touch applications about as fast as some fast food establishments dole out hamburgers, and we're looking at you, McDonald's.
Apple's case against SciStar, the company that's making unauthorized Mac clones, is back on track with the new trial date set for January 11th, 2010. The trial had been temporarily put on hold after SciStar filed for bankruptcy protection in Florida. And in case you aren't familiar with this legal saga, Apple claims SciStar is violating the Mac OS X end user license agreement by building and selling PCs with Leopard pre-installed. Thanks to mounting legal expenses in its battle against Apple, SciStar filed for bankruptcy protection, then filed to dismiss the bankruptcy after Apple was granted approval to move forward with its case in Northern California. And as if SciStar doesn't have enough on its plate, the company just replaced Carr and Farrell, the company it stiffed for over $80,000 in legal bills, with Camara and Sibley, the crack legal team that defended Jamie Thomas Rassett against the RIAA. Of course, she lost that case and was hit with a $1.92 million judgment, which was clearly more than the $220,000 fine the RIAA originally requested.
Yeah, that took some work.
You know, that's a hardworking team.
Yeah, to lose a case so badly that your judgment is multiplied by nine? That takes effort.
It really does. Yeah. And Apple and SciStar are scheduled now to appear before a magistrate judge on July 30th to discuss the possibility of a pretrial settlement, and we can't wait to see how SciStar's new legal team works out.
Apple has applied for a network license. That's a regulatory step needed for entry into the Chinese cell phone market, according to Wedge Partners, a Colorado research firm. According to the firm, Apple has applied for entry into the market with an iPhone that doesn't include Wi-Fi, which has apparently been a sticking point for ye old repressive Chinese communist regime. The Chinese Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, which oversees the world's largest telecom market, wants the iPhone to work only on the country's cellular infrastructure, which is tightly controlled. A Wi-Fi-enabled iPhone could make it easier for users to bypass some of those controls, and we simply can't have that now, can we?
No, we can't.
Bowing to Chinese demands may allow Apple to at least and at last get its device into this potentially lucrative market. We say potentially, but we'll get into that in the context machine.
Apple is planning to start building its new data center in Maiden, North Carolina in August, with hopes of bringing the facility online in late 2010. Apple chose the rural location for the data center after the state offered the company tax incentives to move into the area. Maiden residents should be happy because Apple intends to buy building supplies and materials locally when possible and is also ready to talk with local companies interested in working as vendors, service providers, or independent contractors. Now, once finished, the data center is expected to employ at least 50 full-time employees and to create about 250 additional contract jobs in the area, which is more good news for locals since the area is suffering from high unemployment rates. Apple still isn't saying how it plans to use the server farm, although there is speculation it will support the iTunes Store and the App Store.
This week it was revealed by Microsoft COO Kevin Turner that his company would come out swinging when it begins opening its new fleet of retail stores this year by placing at least some of them next to, or in close proximity to, an Apple store. Said Mr. Turner in a speech at Microsoft's Worldwide Partner Conference, quote, "When we were looking at the lost opportunity in the retail space, we could think of no better way to highlight the vast wasteland of difference between Microsoft and Apple than by simply showing people directly in the starkest terms possible," unquote. Okay, he didn't actually say that, but it's what we were all thinking. In any event, Microsoft will be opening its own retail stores, and some of them will be next to Apple stores. And when we pass by, and pass by we will, we shall hide our eyes in a vain attempt to spare Big Redman the awareness of their own shame.
Oh.
And who knew that Kevin Turner sounded like Bill Gates?
I was surprised, and yet not. And on a happier note, O2 may be facing the possibility of losing a little bit of its iPhone exclusivity in the UK if reports that Apple is negotiating with T-Mobile prove to be true. The deal won't be quite as sweet as it could be because it limits T-Mobile to selling the iPhone 3G while leaving the new iPhone 3GS exclusively with O2. T-Mobile, however, is calling the reports quote-unquote merely speculation, which could be the company's coy way of saying they aren't talking about negotiations or that the rumors really are nothing more than speculation. Now, if Apple and T-Mobile really are working on a UK deal, that will translate into good news for customers since they'll have a choice of iPhone carriers, and competition is always good.
Apple is planning on releasing a 9.7-inch touchscreen tablet in October for the netbook market, or at least that's what the latest rumors are claiming. According to a report in China Times, the tablet will sell for 800 bones U.S., but additional details about the alleged device are slim. This story is, however, in keeping with previous rumors from mainstream media outlets like the Wall Street Journal that claimed months ago that Apple was developing a tablet-based computer with a screen that was from 9.7 inches to 10 inches. Sounds pretty familiar. And that's not to mention the myriad of other rumors coming out of Apple's Taiwanese manufacturing partners. Still, don't hold your breath. And now that sound means that it's time for the namesake segment of our show, The Context Machine. It's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide some context for what's going on.
That's exactly what we do.
That's exactly what we do.
Yeah. And as long as we're here, I'm thinking, why don't we start off with a little bit of Microsoft talk?
It's a little more smack. We haven't quite talked enough smack.
I'm thinking there's still some smack left in both of us.
So let's paint a little bit more of the picture. So Microsoft has decided, of course, to open its own fleet of retail stores. We've known this for months now.
Right.
And so what's new this week is that Kevin Turner revealed that they were going to have some of these stores be, you know, pretty much in the same locations as Apple. Some of them may actually be next to, maybe some will be in the same mall, that sort of thing. And it's just, I mean, you know, I think about that and it's just, I mean, what the hell are they thinking?
Well, keep in mind that Microsoft is a company that has built its empire by finding things other people do and then copying them.
Yeah, and in some cases, you know, leveraging their market share to sort of squeeze out the people that originated the market. And in other cases by doing things like what they did with the browser wars, which was to give their browser away for free, something that Netscape couldn't compete with.
True. And now I'm assuming they're not going to give away their stores for free, so they'll have to work a little bit harder to try and take this market.
Yeah, I wrote a column this week, as of course you know, called the theme of the column is "Where is the win?" And of course, every time I wrote that in my head, it would be like, "Where's the win?" Dump. That's just a little unfortunate glimpse into my mind. And my question in that column was, if you look and I guess I'm going to state this not as a question, but if you look at what Microsoft needs and what Apple needs and how Apple has used their retail stores to fill those needs, it's like none of that stuff applies to Microsoft. You know,
that's true.
Where is the upside for them in having these stores?
That's a good question, especially when you take into account where Microsoft products are already available. So you can go into Best Buy, Fry's, or any number of electronics stores and even office supply stores. And you can buy Windows, you can buy Microsoft Office.
Yeah, tens of thousands of stores in the U.S. and you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of stores around the world can you buy Office and Windows and Microsoft mice and keyboards and Xbox.
Right. And what is it about all of those products that sets them apart in such a way that Microsoft having their own retail establishments makes sense?
Right. If you look at what Apple needed, one of Apple's big problems was a perception problem. You had some great mom and pops who didn't have a lot of resources, and you had some really crappy mom and pops who were just, you know, presenting an awful retail experience, period. And some of those mom and pops, of course, presented a great retail experience, but they were the exception rather than the rule. And if you go into the Best Buy, if you go into the CompUSA, where Apple had its own store within a store, you know, the issue that Apple was facing, I'm kind of being rambling here, I apologize, but the issue that Apple was facing is that in most places, their product was not being represented well, if it was represented at all.
Right. And Microsoft's products seem to be represented at least well enough at the different retail locations where you can buy the products.
They're at the very least being represented favorably. Whether or not, you know, those jillions of Microsoft heads are doing a great job, they are at least favorable. But Apple was having to deal with, especially in the non-Mac specific stores, that Apple was having to deal with, you know, like in some cases, you know, machines not working, Macs not working in particular, employees not interested in selling Macs because Apple wasn't providing spiffs, which are basically sort of cutbacks or kickbacks as a bonus to an employee that sells a product. And, you know, so if the products were even working, a lot of the salespeople weren't interested in selling them because they weren't making any extra money and they didn't know Macs. They didn't care about Macs. As a matter of fact, a lot of them had very negative opinions about Apple and Macs.
That's true. I was actually kicked out of a CompUSA once before there was the Apple store in a store for trying to help someone that was interested in a Mac.
Tell. That's a good story.
Yeah. So, you know, this was years ago. But, yeah, I'd gone into a CompUSA because I needed to pick up something that I knew they were going to have, and it was just a quick in-and-out thing. And while I was there, there was an employee that was talking to a customer, and the woman said, "I'm getting into graphic design, and I need to have a computer that runs the current applications." And, you know, and she's looking at Photoshop and Illustrator and applications like that. And she did was she listed off a whole set of parameters. Where at the time I went, she needs a G4 tower. And so And she even told the employee she was considering getting a Mac because she'd been told that had all the features she needed. And the guy says, "That's not what you want. What you want is this." And takes her over to some crappy PC laptop, which I'm assuming is the computer that the manager had told all the employees to push that day. Well, I knew that wasn't the right computer for her. And so, you know, I politely interjected and told her what I thought would be an appropriate computer for her and steered her back to the Mac. And the employee was not happy with my assistance. The manager overheard and he was not happy also. And so he rather tersely asked me to leave the store.
And, you know, as ridiculous as that entire situation is, it just wasn't all that uncommon, which is why, of course, Apple ended up doing the store within a store, which was really, as we realize now, is their dress rehearsal for doing their own stores.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kinds of problems that Apple was dealing with, and they decided to do their own stores. Steve wanted to be in control of Apple's message. Because
what a surprise.
Right, what a surprise. But in this case, because the other people who had been in control of that message weren't necessarily doing a great job. And again, no, I actually hate the fact that a lot of mom and pops lost their investments in their own stores because Apple would open up Apple stores in areas that they were serving. I'm not coming down on mom and pops. A lot of mom and pops carried the torch for Apple for years when Apple was not carrying its own torch.
That's very true.
And to be fair, we're not coming down on them.
Yeah. And there are still some of the small retailers that are just dealing Apple gear and are doing okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of them in particular deal with business customers who need services that Apple that the Apple stores are not geared towards providing.
True.
So anyway, back to the situation. This just doesn't apply to Microsoft, because even if these Windows drones out there aren't doing a great job at presenting Windows, they're at least presenting it favorably. Apple didn't even have the favorable representation out there. And in addition, Apple opened up the Apple stores and they were doing just fine. But when Apple introduced the iPod, the stores exploded in popularity.
They did. And yeah. And at the time in Denver, there was one Apple store in the Denver area, and it was Aspen Grove. And they seemed to do a good business all the time. But mm-hmm. yeah, when the iPod launched, actually, you know what? I'm mixing up my Apple stores, because as I recall, the iPod launched the same day that store opened. So well, there you go. That's what I get for not being able to remember my own address and things like that. But
fair enough.
Yeah.
But the point remains is that it was iPods that really set the Apple stores into just explosive growth mode in terms of, always having people in them. And of course, Macs benefited from that. The Macs were not the cause of that interest. They were the beneficiary of that interest. And since then, the iPhone has helped keep that momentum that the iPod started. Well, what is Microsoft going to use to bring people in?
I've got it. Bing. If you do a computer search on Bing, it'll just point you to a Microsoft store and that's it. I don't know.
I don't know either. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I am sure. I have no doubt that Microsoft thinks that they can win some kind of self-declared popularity contest. I don't think that's the deal. I think that instead that Microsoft is doing this because they've decided that they also need to be in charge of their message, just like Apple is, and that, since Microsoft copies much better than it innovates, they've decided that, they're going to get control of that message the same way Apple did.
I'm not feeling the love here. Okay, the deal is, from what I understand, Microsoft plans on having their own geniuses, but of course they'll be called something different. But
smart guys.
Yeah, the Microsoft smart dudes or something.
Poindexters.
The Poindexters. All right, so
Microsoft nerds.
So you have the MS Poindexters to be Microsoft's version of the Apple geniuses. But mm-hmm. the Apple geniuses are actually supposed to be providing you with information and help, whereas the MS Poindexters, that's not going to be what they do.
No, they're going to be reinstalling Windows because, that's what you do.
Yeah, and, my speculation is that what they'll really be doing is just offering up reasons why whatever's wrong with your computer isn't their fault.
That They'll be smarter than that.
Well, but, they will, but I don't think they're going to be offering the tech support like Apple does.
Well, and let's look at the differences there. It is a lot easier for Apple to offer support because they control the whole widget.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
There is, as big as it is, there is still a finite number of machines and configurations that are out there, and you know they're pretty much all guaranteed by Apple to work. You know, Microsoft doesn't have that. Plus, Microsoft can't take in, or I guess it could, but I can't see them doing it. They can't take in an HP machine to fix it. They can't take in a Dell machine to fix it. I mean, I guess they could if it's software related, but unless they're going to be competing with, you know, like Best Buy's tech support, you know, I mean, I don't get it. I think it's a mistake. And the biggest thing is, there's going to be no one in those stores, and when people walk past an Apple store, they're going to see them crowded, and they're going to walk past that Microsoft store, and they're going to see no one there, and it's going to be an ugly environment. At least I think it will be. And I think that all they're going to do is sort of perpetuate this feedback loop of crappiness that people associate with them.
I fear that you are right, which is unfortunate because having competition in the market is a good thing all the way around. Mm-hmm. But if Microsoft opens stores that don't show its own company in a favorable light, well, that's bad for business.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't see the need for it, and I don't see that even if there was a need for it, I don't see how they're going to accomplish anything with it. Where is the win? Don't! there is no win here. There's no win for them. At least I don't see it. I just don't see it.
I'm not seeing it either. Now, to jump over to the other side of the fence, when Apple was opening its retail stores, there were a lot of people that were predicting they would fail miserably.
Well, in part because they were pointing to every other PC company that had tried similar things that had failed miserably.
Right. And Apple didn't do their stores the same way.
Right. But Microsoft can't do their stores the way Apple did.
That's true, because
they don't have the product family to do it with.
No. I mean, you can go in and look at only so many keyboards, mice, and Xbox with red rings on them before you're ready to go to the Apple store.
Well, and you know, like I wonder if they can do things like set up Xboxes with games playing and stuff, because then you're just going to have a bunch of kids that are hanging out dominating those kinds of things. I don't know. I don't see it. I am well aware that Microsoft knows more about what they want to do than I do. I am well aware that they've got a gajillion dollars to throw at this. I'm well aware that they've got people that are smarter than me that are working on this. But, you know, they also have people that are smarter than me working on Windows. Look what a pile of crap that is.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not seeing Microsoft's retail venture being a productive move for the company.
Yeah, I don't think it will be either. But you know what is productive?
Oh, tell me.
Smilo, my Mac's PDF Pen Pro.
Oh, holy crap! Yes. You know
that is a good. That's a good product.
It is, and you know, of course, it's no secret that I spent years in the graphic design world, where I was using products like InDesign and Quark Express and Adobe mm-hmm. Acrobat and all that. But still, when it comes to doing a lot of the editing that I need to do on PDFs, mm-hmm. I don't do it with Adobe Acrobat. I do it with PDF Pen Pro.
Oh yeah, me too. Actually, I've finally entered the world of modifying PDFs, and it's actually handy because I was able to take all the stuff that we have talked about in our show. And by the way, we're mentioning this because Smile on My Mac is this week's sponsor.
Oh well, that totally makes sense. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was able to take all the stuff that we've talked about when talking about PDF Pen Pro. You've always done most of the talking on that, and apply that to what I needed to get done this week. And it's a great product.
And it was easy to learn, wasn't it?
It was. And they have a new version that they just released. Let me get that version number because I am smart like that. I think it's
4.1.4.
It is 4.1.4, and one of the things that they added is the ability to take a PDF, document and basically do an OCR scan, sort of a virtual OCR scan, so that it's rendered. So basically, whatever the document is rendered as text that you can edit.
Which is very cool.
And handy.
And handy. Yeah, I remember the old days, you know, back way long ago, way before Mac OS X, when OCR was just a horrible thing to deal with, and it was really expensive to get the applications. And now you can get
inaccurate.
Yeah, and very inaccurate. And now you can get PDF Pen for, what, under $100 and and do OCR work.
Right, it's $49.95, and you can get PDF Pen Pro for $99.95, and it's well worth it if you have to mess with PDF documents.
Oh yeah, absolutely worth it. And as long as we're talking about Smile on My Mac, have you had a chance to play with Disk Label?
Yeah, you know, I personally haven't played with Disk Label, but it looks like a great product. I know that, and you know, we always tell the truth here on the Apple Context Machine. And I think Smile on My Mac is still offering a 20% discount on it. That's good until July 31st.
Yes, they are. So,
so it's $28.76 instead of $35.95. And of course, what you do is you make labels and stuff like that. We've talked about that recently.
And it's a very cool app. So. Yeah, there you go. So when you make all those PDFs and you want to put them on a CD, now you can make a professional label for them.
Yep, and you can find that at smileonmymac.com/AWR, which we have in the show notes.
And, you know, I just love the people at Smile on My Mac.
Mm-hmm. They're good folk. Good folk making good products for a great operating system.
I agree.
Speaking of good folks, I'm sorry. Let's actually talk about the Chinese regime there.
Oh, okay. We can do that.
No, so I find it interesting that Apple has been willing, has been basically, of course, you know, it's taken a long time, so we can maybe even say forced to modify their product in order to get it into the Chinese market.
Which is unfortunate, but I guess in the grand scheme of things, we shouldn't be surprised. Because if you want to get your product in front of all the gajillion people that live in China, you have to play China's game.
You know, and this is almost an example of an irresistible force versus an immovable object, although I do agree with Asimov that in a universe you can't have the two. Because if there is an irresistible force, there can be no immovable object. But that's a philosophical discussion we could have another time.
Yeah, when we transition into the philosophy context machine.
The philosophy science fiction context machine, yes. My point is that, you know, Apple, generally speaking, is often seen as the irresistible force. They tend to get what they want.
They do,
but
not China, always.
But not always. And China pretty much always gets what it wants. Seems like everybody and their brother is always willing to kowtow, which is an appropriate term since I believe it's a Chinese term, to the Chinese government when it comes to their demands. You look at companies like Google and Yahoo that have, you know, agreed to censor their bloody content to meet Chinese censorship requirements. And, you know, now Apple has modified the iPhone and dropped one of its prime selling points, which is Wi-Fi.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate. Now, on one hand, you could say companies are doing this because it's the foot in the door, and once they're in, then maybe they can start making other changes and bring back those features. But then you can also look at it as, well, China got what they wanted, and they know they can get what they want, and so they're not going to let the companies start adding in the features they made them take out.
Correct. China always pretty much gets what it wants, and that includes from the U.S. government. Pretty much. Has for, it seems, forever. And I honestly don't understand that, but it is what it is. Politics aside, though, we should also note that, and this was a point that Jeff was bringing up when we were talking before the show about Egypt.
Right. So this is not the first time Apple's been in a position where they have agreed to limit the iPhone's features for a government's requirements. And in Egypt, you can't have GPS on the iPhone.
Right, because Egypt has in place anti-GPS restrictions because they say it can be used to target military and or government facilities. And so Apple basically had to turn the GPS ability of the iPhone off. I think we're going to have a note to the support, the knowledge base support article.
Right. and
in the show notes.
Right. And so in Egypt, the location triangulation works the way it did on the first gen iPhone, where it uses cell towers and Wi-Fi.
Right. Right. And we might add, there are many other countries that have similar restrictions. The U.S. has a restriction on the level of resolution that a GPS device can offer.
Right.
I can't remember. I think it's like, is it like 20 yards or 9 yards or something? It can't resolve to better than that? It's something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, and this is something that I should know, because it's a statistic, or it's a bit of data I've had to rattle off many times. But yeah, we're in the right ballpark there.
And again, that's for the same reason that it could be used by potential bad guys to know specifically where they are.
Right. And actually, altitude on a GPS is intentionally thrown way off.
Hmm. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
So it's not like So Apple doing this in China is not the first time they've had to do this, because they did have to do it with Egypt, and there are plenty of restrictions in a variety of countries on similar technologies. I kind of wonder, you know, how governments really think they're going to hold these tides back, because they can't.
Well, you know, it's like Princess Leia said to Grand Moff Tarkin, that the tighter you squeeze your fist, the more star systems will fall through. Why did I choose that?
That was totally awesome. I mean, you know, if you look at the export controls for a long time, the U.S. had very tight export controls that Apple ran up against.
Yes,
supercomputing export controls to keep supercomputers out of the hands of terrorist states. And of course, you know, $400 and $500 computers that you can buy off the shelf, $300 computers that you can buy off the shelf are more powerful than supercomputers from 20, 30 years ago.
That's true. Hey, do you remember the commercial Apple did about the whole supercomputer thing?
Oh, that was a great commercial.
With the tanks all around the G4. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The good old days.
The good old days. So, I don't know. I also wonder whether or not, like, is the iPhone, as I understand it, the device that was submitted to this Chinese bureaucratic arm doesn't have Wi-Fi ability. It's not that they're just turning it off. It's just not there. Because I imagine, I would bet, we don't know this by any stretch of the imagination, but I would bet that Apple tried to submit it, or at least tried to ask if they could submit it, with it just turned off. And they were probably told no.
I would assume that you're right. Because
if Apple can turn it off,
someone can turn it back on.
Yeah, hackers can turn it back on. So it'd be interesting to see if the Wi-Fi chip is just out of there. And of course, then it'll also be interesting to see what happens with the import market from, you know, there are already supposedly a million iPhones in China.
True.
And gray market devices.
Right. Here's another thing I just thought of. Okay, so Egypt is worried about GPSs being used as part of a system to target specific locations for attacks. Mm-hmm. And China's worried about people just getting information. Why aren't they worried about the GPSs?
That is an interesting question. Well, you know, everything is subjective.
There you go.
And, you know, Egypt does face quite a bit of that. There is a lot of unrest within the country from fundamentalist forces that don't like that don't like the tourism trade, and specifically don't like all of the pre-Islamic the pharaoh-based monuments and things like that people are, you know, flock to see because that's how they choose to interpret things. And so, you know, I could actually see Egypt's concern over this. I don't know.
It's a mess.
Trying to put your hand up to stop the flood.
Yeah, it's not going to work in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of not, I'm on a segue roll today. Speaking of not going to work,
I can only imagine where this is going, and not just because I have the script with me.
PsyStar, you're doing it wrong.
Oh man, you know, if you're going to fire your legal team and hire a new legal team, first off, I'd recommend not choosing the same legal team that caused someone to get screwed even worse by the RIAA.
Uh-huh.
And then I have to question the sensibility of any legal team that would agree to take on a client that has already stiffed another legal team for over $80,000. I'm just saying.
Very good points.
You know, with Chimera on, with that legal team on board now, I'm waiting for someone to suggest that maybe Apple is the deep pockets behind PsyStar's legal defense.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. So what we're basically laughing at is this story about PsyStar canning the, you know, brilliant legal team that tried to argue that Apple was a monopoly.
Right.
And canning them and choosing the legal term that the legal team that that took a $220,000 fine request from the IRAA and turned it into a $1.92 million fine implemented by a jury.
Yeah, and this was for their client.
For their own client. Oh, fail.
I mean, when that happens, does the attorney just like turn to the client and go, oops?
Sorry, dude. Oh, my bad.
That's just not right.
Yeah. I don't, man, PsyStar. Again, I'm going to say there's just no way deep pockets are behind this company. They're just too inept. They're just too inept. They're just, I mean, although, you know, I mean, if all right, so I'm going to play devil's advocate to myself. They keep coming up with all these ridiculous maneuvers like declaring bankruptcy and then asking that the bankruptcy be undeclared, things like that. I've talked to some people who suggested that that's actually not a bad way to delay things.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that's not a bad way to delay things, but the bankruptcy courts look very unfavorably on that.
I would imagine so. And I, if their only intent right now is to delay, but why are they wanting to delay? I don't know, man. Again, I don't see it. Where is the win? Don't! Where's the win here?
You know, I'm not seeing a win here. And
I am for Apple.
Okay, for Apple. I am not seeing a win here for PsyStar. And keep in mind, I am not an attorney, although I have played attorneys on stage before. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like I know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Very similar.
It's very similar.
It's very similar to you actually knowing what you're talking
exactly.
about in this case.
Yeah. Maybe I could be PsyStar's legal defense. Yeah, who knows? But no, I am just not seeing this playing out in PsyStar's favor.
No, I'm not either. And I might add, I hope that it doesn't. I believe that it is imperative for the good of the consumer that proprietary systems be allowed to exist and for corporations, for computer companies to be able to control where things like operating systems are used. I think that it is imperative for the end result of the quality of the product that we work for. Proprietary systems and open systems and licensed systems need to be free to compete.
I agree.
And for that reason, I want PsyStar to lose this case. I absolutely want PsyStar to lose this case for that reason.
Now, I'm hoping that PsyStar doesn't have to just fold and disappear before Apple gets their final judgment, whatever that is. Because if Apple can get a good judgment in their favor in this case before PsyStar has to fizzle and disappear, then Apple has set a good track record for themselves to be able to say, look, you know, we have now shown that we're not a monopoly with this and that we're running everything the way it's supposed to run.
That argument's gone. I mean, Steyr withdrew that argument.
Right. But once they have everything settled and they have their judgment, then they're set up so that they can say anyone else that wants to make clones, look, we've already established you can't.
Right. Yeah. Setting the legal precedent's important, and I imagine that they will. I imagine they will. But in the meanwhile, it looks like we get another week of laughs with the crazy zany antics of Steyr.
Yeah. And then come July 30th, that's when Apple and Steyr have an appearance before a magistrate judge, which is just part of the whole process. And I can't wait to hear how that goes.
Yep. 2 weeks from now. Not quite 2 weeks.
Yeah. So if nothing happens between now and then, in 2 weeks, we're going to have some more Steyr jokes, I'm guessing.
Unless Steyr is able to get yet another stay or delay, I should say, because they've had to change legal teams or because they chose to choose legal teams.
Yeah. So we'll see.
We'll see. We will see. Now, I tell you what, we've gone over, so we should probably take that particular moment to say goodbye to our friends.
I think that sounds like a really good idea. Yeah. And so first, if you have anything to add, comment, or question, send your audio or text comments to, what's our new email address? What are we going to
ACM@MacObserver.com.
ACM@MacObserver.com. And remember, even though we didn't practice this today, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening. And thank you for sending us your comments and feedback. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass, if we actually use bass, was recorded by Boom just for us. Our theme song was recorded by the Atomic Love Bombs. That's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer, and we're going to have the Atomic Love Bombs take us out.
Trapped by lies that we don't know. I can't see.